You are listening to Go Dock Yourself, your weekly documentary book club. Listen in while we two errands dissect our most recent documentary find. Sometimes weird, sometimes mainstream, but always entertaining. Grab a cup of coffee and let's clatch.
Hi, and welcome to Go Dock Yourself. I'm Erin McCourt.
And I'm Erin McCourt. Hello, everyone. I will apologize up front if I sound really bad today. I went to a concert last night that was inside, and it's been a long time since I've gone to a concert in a small indoor venue, and I forgot how loud it was, and I forgot how loud you have to sing to feel like you're singing with them. And so now I don't have much of a voice, but it was a lot of fun, so go see your concerts.
Right.
Yeah.
Local venue music stuff is good.
Words are hard. Yes, Erin.
We have plans. We have big plans to go see some shows this summer, so that'll be fun.
I know. I have a whole list, but they're all outside. They're all outside shows. So this one was in the basement, which I know you've been in.
And I, too, was very concerned about hearing loss.
And it was, this concert was a punk band. So if you guys ever want to go see me first in the Gimme Gimmies, they are worth every penny. Go see them. They're amazing. And even if you don't like punk music, it's fun because they just do all covers. Every song you can imagine, show tunes, country, pop, old rock. And they just kind of punk it up. So it's punk-like,
okay,
really.
Love that.
And just fun and silly. Mm-hmm. Okay, but speaking of silly, we're going to cover Monster Camp, the story of Nero Seattle. This was done in 2007. It's 1 hour and 21 minutes long. I watched it on Tubi, and it's directed by Cullen Hoback.
This was such, I don't even know how to describe it. I laughed a lot. I scratched my head because there are so many unanswered questions.
Yes.
You had to take a lot out of context because they didn't necessarily introduce people very often, but they did have some like text on the screen to like clue you in a little bit here and there. But So you said Nero Seattle, which is the name of this game, right? This chapter. There are 50 of these games, chapters worldwide. And they kind of liken it to Dungeons and Dragons, but this is played out in real life.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it is live action role playing. Mm-hmm. Also known as LARPing. And there are other live action role play games that people do. Magic the Gathering is one. There's a vampire one. I know there are several other ones. At least there were in the 90s. I'm not sure about now. I am not a LARPer.
Not yet.
I'm about to join. But in this case, it's fantasy. Think trolls, wizards, good guys, bad guys, spells. And they do it. They say they do it 1 week in each month at the beginning of the show. But here they make it sound like it's more quarterly, like one in the summer, one in the winter, one in the fall. And it seems like a lot of work to put together. So if you're doing it every month, that seems excessive.
Right. I think when they started, that was their goal, right? And so they talk about kind of the ebbs and flows of different resources available to them. They do discuss that they charge folks to participate. So if you're a player, it's about $60 for the weekend. If you're a monster, then it's $20 or $25 a month. So they are generating some revenue, but at the same time, there's a lot of costuming and that kind of stuff. They don't talk about like a rental of the space or anything like that. But yeah, I can imagine that there, most things, there has to be a little bit of resource to put it on. Yeah.
Right. And there's an owner of the chapter. So I thought that was interesting as well, that one person owns the chapter and is responsible for getting other people involved and creating it in that. So I have so many questions throughout this. So many questions that aren't answered. But you mentioned like there's no mention of like renting the space. It looks like they're doing it in a state park. a lot of state parks close at night. Some don't, so I'm guessing this one doesn't. They're using buildings, so do they have to rent them? Are they camping? It's over the weekend. Do they have facilities available? Is anyone showering? Who's feeding them? Are they getting drinks? Sunscreen? I'm so concerned for everybody involved because they didn't answer any of these questions for me.
I love your logistic brain. Yes, I too was like, okay, I get it that it's in a state park. And I also get that sometimes there's not like, they're not always gated, especially the bigger ones. It looks like they're in what they call the tavern, which is the center building of the game, kind of a gathering place, if you will. It looks like a shelter house, but it's got windows and stuff. So like a large cabin, one story type dealio. But yeah, I assume what happens is they ring a bell and everybody just drops to the ground and that's where you stay overnight. You better bring some energy bars.
Like they just went nonstop. I know. You never see anyone eating or really drinking and I'm like, what? How are they? I'm just so confused.
Don't worry your pretty head about that. Okay. Don't worry about it.
Fine. I'm going to show up at the next game and just bring snacks and be like, are you guys okay?
Like instead of throwing those little spell bags, you'll be throwing granola bars at people.
Yeah.
If you catch it in your mouth, you get extra points.
50 points.
We're so stupid. Can you please do me the solid of reading your LARP name, if you will?
My name for this episode is Baratnan the Deaf. And I just put the deaf because I am deaf today after that concert. So I'm guessing I would be one of those people that would just be at the mercy of everyone else and just ask and beg for thanks. So no actual benefit to the game.
Do you think like your script would say, huh? What?
The nice thing is I don't have to memorize any script at all. I just wander around. Mm-hmm. And your name?
I am Ram Quiver the Wily.
Ram Quiver sounds like a great porn name.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I was very happy with my name generator. Mm-hmm. I think what we really haven't discussed is that your mom sews and my mom sews. And so our costumes would be tight.
Yes. And my mom crochets. So she could crochet some like armor. I'm using quotey fingers. You can't see, but it would look kind of like armor, right? I mean,
yeah. And it seems to me like really, your presentation is quite important to this. So like there are people bringing it in the costume department.
There were. So one of the other questions I had was Shane is our owner, right? He's the owner of this chapter. Mm-hmm. And so he talks about some of the things he's had to do. You know, in the costumes, he's in charge of logistics, he's in charge of all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, so do they make all the costumes for everybody? And then do you know, well, what sizes are they? How do you know? People change over time. And then other people talked about acquiring and kind of building their own costumes. And so I wonder if as characters, the player characters, maybe they kind of make their own costumes because they're more involved. And then the monsters who are non-player characters, and they will change throughout the weekend gaming. They can change to different monsters depending on the game they're playing that day. Those are the ones that get costumed by Shane et al., if you will. Does that sound like what you thought too?
Yeah, that's what I thought as well. Because Shane talks about there's kind of a plot, which is sort of a script. And so the players come in to play against the game, if you will. And the rest of the people are just kind of plot points.
Yeah. Okay.
Is that how you understood it?
You know what? I don't know. Because they're like, we wrote out this plot and we know what everyone's going to do. And I'm like, then why is anyone playing? If you already know what's going to happen, why are you playing? You can't change the outcome. This isn't a choose your own adventure, apparently. You already know. Because on the card they give them, it tells you how they're going to die and what's going to happen. You know what I mean? Some of it makes it sound like it's very scripted and others make it sound like they just give them a loose outline and they just have to play that out.
I guess I err more on the loose outline part because they talked about like, these are your strengths and these are your weaknesses and everybody seems to have this. And by the way, you as a player have to know volumes of stuff for this. You have to know spells and numbers and you have to know like what gets, what kills what. And if you die, hopefully it's only like mostly dead because if you're all the way dead,
he ain't coming back.
There's like a whole cascade of events that has to happen. And I need a decision tree because it is very hard. But like they just show you all of the stuff that people have to memorize. And it is a lot.
Yeah.
And if you're like a monster, people are just yelling stuff at you all the time. You have to do real fast math in your head.
Yes. Yes, you have to do a lot of fast math as you're getting hit. And they're like, 5 points, 5 points. You have to add all that shit up.
And there's 50 people hitting you at once.
Yes, it looks like it's very outnumbered most of the time. You have one person in the middle fighting against like 10 people. And I'm like, how is this okay? It's just not. It's not okay. And you're talking as you're doing it to tell them. And so that's the thing that kind of makes me laugh the most. Because some of the phrases are really long to get the spells out. Like, I conjure the earth's magic to bring life upon this, blah, blah, blah. And it's like a 5-page soliloquy just to get someone back to life or something. And in the meantime, someone has plenty of time to kill you. It's not very well thought out in that aspect, in my opinion.
Again, it'd be interesting to see some different perspectives on this. Like, I need, again, somebody. We need to go. We just need somebody to invite us to something.
There's an East Coast chapter we need. We can go to that one.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But you did say there's a lot of stuff. So they talk about there's a 200-page rule book.
Yes.
That's a big fucking book of rules. I'm just saying.
And it's 11 font double space. I mean, there's no pictures. I don't know.
There are pictures of some of the people in these chapters, but not many. It's not a picture book, if you will. Mm-hmm. There are 250 different spells and effects to memorize. I'm like, no, that's too much work that I'm not getting paid for.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm.
And there's an element of, okay, when you watch Harry Potter and they're wizard dueling, okay, they're doing a combination of like saying a spell and doing a spell. And there's a little element of that in there too. So if you're getting ready to say, oh, fuck, I don't remember the names of these spells. And somebody can sneak one in while you're like midway through yours. Then they win. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can I?
Expelliarmus, and then somebody else says something else, and you're just fucked. You're like a block of ice or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. Can I point out that later in the Harry Potter series, during the big fights, no one was saying words. They were just shooting shit out of their wands. There were no words involved. I just want to point out that fucking plot hole. These things drive me crazy.
Maybe there was a spell for like an automatic firing situation out of your wand that wasn't specified. So you didn't see the 200-page book. You don't know.
I don't know. So, I don't.
You're right.
This is also why no one wants to watch movies with me. Because I'd be like, hey guys, I don't like this. Doesn't make sense.
You pause it and they're like, stop it.
I am the worst.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of, I can imagine it's a kind of a turnoff if you're not into this a lot, but the people that are into it seem like they're pretty into it. So.
Yeah. There are a couple people that are new that seem to have a harder time. Like our friend, Matt, we meet this young cat, Matt, and he's just seems to be struggling. He's an NPC. He's a monster. He changes monsters throughout and he just kind of, you know, ambles about and then dies. He doesn't really know much about what he's doing, and some of the players are trying to help him, but it is a lot to take it, because at first I'm like, I don't know that he's very good at this game, and then once they started going into how much was involved, I'm like, oh Jesus, you know, that's a lot, especially the first time.
Right, so that's kind of a high bar to gain entry, right? Like, you're not really going to get a lot of respect until you can blast out these commands. I don't know.
Okay. Can we also talk about the fact that these NPCs, like I said, they change. So each day, so it's over a weekend, and it sounds like they do a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, sometimes all through the night type of game. So like three separate gameplays, because the monsters change throughout. So the people playing the monsters which is where the monster camp comes from. The people playing the monsters have to change characters throughout. And when they change characters, they get new abilities, new weaknesses, new everything they have to memorize. Now, these are considered lesser, if you will. They pay less money. They do a lot. But they have to memorize and do a lot more stuff than the people who continue a character throughout multiple games, right? They have the same character. They know their strengths and weaknesses. They know everything about them. Why are they considered superior when these people are doing a lot more fucking work?
I don't know. That's a really good question. But it seems like when you get started, you don't come in as a character. You come in to the, you know, monster to the chapter camp, as a kind of a peon, as a monster. But do you think if we played video games, it'd be easier for us to comprehend? Because I bet a lot of characters have this like mix of strengths and weaknesses and health points and whatnot, you know?
Yeah, probably. They do talk about the fact that most of the players of Nero play video games and role-playing video games. So like World of Warcraft was mentioned. That's a huge one back. This was done in, what I say, 2007. So early to mid-aughts, that was a really big thing. My ex-husband used to play it a lot. And I remember reading news articles about the divorce rates going up because of World of Warcraft. Right?
Right.
People were no longer paying attention to their spouse because they're so invested in this game. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on in this game that people can't turn it off? But it's an addiction, like anything.
Right. Can we talk a little bit about Dave?
We can. And I might cut this part out, but I have to tell you that every time I look at him, all I can think of is Fight Club and Meatloaf in Fight Club. And when the character says, this is Bob. Bob has bitch tits. And Dave has bitch tits as well. And that's all I could think of every time I saw him. It's hard to concentrate on what he was saying. I'm just going to put that out there. But go ahead.
I totally agree with you, though, that he's not, he doesn't really come across very good in this. He doesn't, there's not a lot of things to like about him. So I wrote some things down because we're kind of talking about different characters and different abilities and stuff like that. So Dave. He's a special monster. He's the dream moth.
He is.
His ability is devours the minds of his victims. Also, he's got hypnotic glare. And there is a wing action that goes with this. Like, he spreads a cape out, like, I don't know, fringe lizard style. I don't know what else to say. So then he can use his proboscis to eat your mind. So he, like, puts his hand on your shoulder and he's like, gobble one, gobble two, gobble three, whatever. And now you're mindless.
Gobbled up.
Right?
Yes.
And if you're being gobbled, you just have to stand there. It's humiliating. And I'm like, anyway, Dave seems to enjoy being a villain. He likes to watch other figures to figure out how to kill them. And again, you have to add up that damage really fast. And the dream moth will fall if he's had enough. But again, he's in the middle of a bunch of people and they're hitting him with this basically a foam sword, right? And they're like 30 damage, 30 damage, 60 damage or whatever. And I would just be like, well, after 4 seconds, you have to be dead. I don't know. But they have to kind of stop the game because somebody loses their glasses and like they have to, or every time there's like one of these little scrums, somebody's like, ouch. And they're like, oh, sorry. So it's very funny.
Takes you a little bit out of the fantasy, right? Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was funny because he was standing there and you're just yelling at people like, hypnotic glare, hypnotic glare. And I'm like, it just seems not very powerful in the end. It's just, we just don't have imaginations, Aaron. That's what it comes down to.
I guess. Yeah. And everybody's got, you know, their real name and then their fantasy name. There's a guy named Paul. He's Kurgard. He's a mechanical dwarf. And I'm like, okay. There's a guy named JP and he's Sir Gregor and he's a 15-year veteran, which I guess there's no one that's played longer than him.
Ever.
Anywhere ever. Yeah. And his is, I was like, he's almost like the bard in The Witcher is sort of the mojo I had for him. It's really funny to be like, the guys that like, in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, they're like, and they chopped him up and they ran him over. And, you know, like the little sing-songy thing that they follow with. Oh, so good.
I love the fact that, so Paul Vorvik his character was Kurgard Zulandarka, or whatever. But translated, it goes to, and he says, Tinker Stouch. And I'm like, do you think it was supposed to be Tinker's Touch? Because a tinker with the touch, like a, but Tinker Stouch.
And he's mechanical?
Like, do we think this, that's how it's pronounced? It's a made-up language, so no. I don't know.
That's so weird.
It's weird. So they kind of cover, they start off and they cover a little bit of the like, summer raid, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then they go to winter. And winter is the biggest one. And, you know, they have a safety briefing. I'm here for safety first, guys. But they,
safety first, yeah.
Yeah. They talk about how it could get really cold overnight. It could get down to 10 degrees Fahrenheit and just below freezing. But I'm like, I didn't see any of this for the summer one. And it could be hot and you can need sunscreen. Make sure you have water. They're in the wooded area. Lyme disease is no joke. So I'm just saying, I did not see the same consideration in the summer.
I don't know. I don't know if they have enough folks to have the safety talk. I mean, it seems like they're just barely getting this stuff off the ground the farther we go into it. So it's hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
They do talk to a couple of the LARPers and kind of get into their personal life. So I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And aside, last night at the concert, I made the comment, and I think bands should take note of this. I think as you come on, everyone should have a name tag that says what they do for a living. Because I'm very interested when I see someone with Liberty spikes to know if they are like a doctor outside of this event. You know what I mean? And yeah. It's the same with this, right? You see these people and like, what do they do in the real world?
We do get some tasty nuggets mm-hmm. about that.
Yes.
I think you mentioned Paul before. So let's kind of go back because he's got some stuff. They show you his house. It is absolutely full of pictures of him in various garb, right? So he's posing just with the biggest swords. And they're framed and they're up on the wall and you talk to his mom about it.
Let's mention he is 17, right? He's not a 30-year-old living with his mom. He is 17. Mm-hmm. So yes, still living with his family. And I love that they embrace that, right? Mm-hmm. They embrace the fact that he does this weird, fun stuff. And they're like, that's it. That's mm-hmm. you. That's fine. It's harmless. So.
Yeah. Seems like the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree here because Paul's dad, who's a software developer, so you find out that's mm-hmm. what he does in yep. the real world. He's also a monster. And I would like to say that Paul's mom is a saint.
Yes.
Because that goddamn house is full of the dad's hobbies. Mm-hmm. And oh boy.
Yeah, a couple of comments. She said, well, he likes to keep stuff. And so I had to get to the point where either I had to get a new husband or learn to live with the stuff. So I learned to live with the stuff. And I'm like, why are you the only one compromising, ma'am? Why couldn't there be a little bit like, okay, you can only have one hobby at a time. And then when you move on to something else, we need to get rid of this stuff and get a new hobby and put that, you know what I mean? There can be some balance. It's not all or nothing. But in this case, it seems to be all or nothing.
Again, you know how I like when they present things and the people that are being presented on think it's going one way. And my mm-hmm. take on it is wholly different, which is exactly very what different. You're talking about. I'm like, this guy is a ponytailed douchebag. No, thank you.
I also want to point out that they show Paul and his friends in a couple different situations. The first one they show him is him and his friend in his room playing DDR to metal music. I did not know that was an option. I thought only techno was available. And now I want to get a new DDR game. It was so fun.
Also, that friend is wearing JNCOs, and that cracked my shit up too. I was like, oh, all right.
Bust them back out. They're hip again, my
That's
dude.
That's right.
I do like the fact that it's something Paul and his dad can do together, right? Mm-hmm. It's especially when kids are teenagers. There's very little I feel like you have in common with them because parents are just old and out of touch at the worst. And mm-hmm. so I enjoyed seeing them do stuff together. So they seem to have a good relationship. That's good.
They do. And yes, whatever you bond over, I guess, is fine. We have another example of that. There's a guy named Kelly His character name is Evan the Cook.
I thought it was Evod.
Okay.
E-V-A-D.
Well, there you go. He brings his Evan. Teenage daughter.
I like Evan. He's just Evan the Cook. Sorry.
Evan the Cook.
It's not very menacing.
Evod, whatever. Okay. The point of all this is to say he drags his teenage daughter along. And at first I was like, oh, okay. Because then he talks about how he pays her allowance in gold coins, which is part of the game. You have to have some monies to do things, I guess. And she seems like she's a fairly good sport, although she is just kind of sitting there. So you did not get a great read on it. But I think he's a little bit more enthusiastic about it than she is. And I'm sure that the mom is just like, yes, see you guys later. See you on Monday or whatever. It's fine.
Right. Have a good time. Make good choices.
Right.
I just thought when he said he paid her in gold coin, I thought, I never thought to pay my kids in imaginary money. That is the best thing ever.
Oh.
You don't need real money. Here's the imaginary kind.
Right.
Jesus.
Yeah, because then she's like, got to stay in it.
To use it, right? Or she can just spend it all and get like the best sword ever and cut her own head off and be like, look, I'm dead. I can't play anymore.
I thought maybe she was going to the bars and getting all the wenches and spending it on booze.
Even better. And I also thought with it being so cold out and they're out all night long. And I'm like, you know what? You know, I would just get killed immediately. Like walk into someone's sword and be like, look, I'm dead. And I go back inside and get hot chocolate. This is horrible.
Oh my God.
This is why we're not invited, Erin.
Not yet. Somebody's going to be like, we'll turn these broads. We'll turn these ladies. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So there's some more questions I kind of had because they talk about the running of the event. Not enough, not nearly enough for my brain. Mm-hmm. But Shane is having problems keeping people. It's not employed because they're all volunteers, but they make it sound like employed. So they only have about three of them to do everything. And there is like this database they keep of all the characters that they've ever used and all this information, which is good because they can just go back and search. Mm-hmm. But I will say even in 2007, that computer looked fucking old. It looked like it was from straight up 1987.
Mm-hmm.
They live together in a house. I'm assuming they all have other jobs. So they kind of just are roommates who have the same hobby or a throuple. I don't know. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like a whole lot of work. And the players agree. They're like, this is a lot of logistical stuff to put together. There's costumes, there's plots, there's blah, blah, blah. Insurance involved, I'm sure. And so like you said, the crew's getting smaller and smaller. And so it's getting harder and harder to do this.
And I wonder if part of that's driven by Shane, because he seems like he got into it for love of it, right? He was a former player. Mm-hmm. They talked to him about how he doesn't play anymore. And then at the end, all he does is play. And I'm like, oh, cool. But you can kind of tell that he's getting a little bit jaded about it. And I wonder if part of that, you know, maybe it's one of those things that feeds off of each other. He can't find reliable help for free. And also he's got a bad attitude about it. And that's like driving people away.
Yeah. You just get bitter and burn out.
Sure.
Right. It happens.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting to watch them prepare costumes, props.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, I'm watching them prepare all this stuff. And it seems like for every round they prepare it. And I'm like, can some of that be recycled? Can we use it again? Why are we preparing all new stuff every time?
Mm-hmm.
I really need to talk to someone about this. So many questions.
Well, it even starts to impact the timing of the game. Like, it doesn't get started till way later. And I'm like, are there any women that are helping with this? Because we would not have these problems if the girls were involved. Yeah. But
there are a couple women.
Yeah.
We have Becca and Val, I think, are the two main women involved. Yeah.
So, but they're, I don't get the feeling that they're in supervisory roles here.
It seems like Shane seems like the type of person who, yes, wants help, but also wants to do everything himself because it needs to be done right or there's micromanaging and it's not in a bad way. I'm not saying he's a bad person, but there's some personalities that are just like, oh, I can't release this, right? You can't give that kind of work away.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems like he needs to hold on to all that, which is it seems to be very stressful for him as well. So not good for his health, not good for his mentality, yes, or any of that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like,
or the game.
You know, you can tell that he really cares about this, but I think it's just become too much. And I don't know that he knows a better way out, because what he's worked on before is not currently working anymore. So that's my read on it.
Right. Biggest bulk of this documentary they show is the winter event, which is the biggest one, I said. And it's interesting for me because we see these, this is where you kind of see the differences of like the monsters playing. Oh, this time they're playing an undead lizard. And I know they mean zombie, but in my opinion, undead means alive. So it's just a fucking lizard, but whatever. And the voidlings or other things, right? So it's interesting to see those different roles in the different games played each day. But I just don't really understand it, because I don't understand how this lasts all day, every day. What are you doing this whole time?
I do not know. Because to me, it looks like everything ends up the same. It always ends up with a bunch of characters surrounding the monster, just putting him down, basically. There is one scene where they're trying to collect spleens from some rando poor person that's like walking along a beach, which is like probably some scummy pond. So they're collecting spleen for some spell that they need. So this guy has to die and then regenerate and walk down the scummy shore again, get killed, and then resurrect again and walk down. And so that was the only part where I was like, oh, that looks different than what they've been doing, just walking around in this field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about Brandon and Carter?
I could talk.
Brandon, not Brandon.
All day about these two.
So they're monsters and they're friends and they live together. It looks like they kind of live on their own, but together. They could just be sharing one parent's basement. I don't know.
Great question.
They are. Initially, I'm like, okay, they're kind of really cute, right? They're really sweet together. They're good friends. Like, I guess Carter is a lot to handle. Like, he just seems like he pontificates a lot. And Brandon's like, it's cool, whatever. So he just kind of takes it. And so they balance each other really well. Brandon works at a retail store, but he still plays like over 40 hours a week of World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
Carter's unemployed. And he plays World of Warcraft on the computer until Brandy gets home, and then he goes to the TV. And I'm like, well, I guess at least he's moving a little bit. I hope he's wearing compression socks, because deep vein thrombosis is coming for you.
And mind you, they're still sitting right by each other from the video. Like, you can see that they are sitting there together.
Right next to each other, yeah. And neither have finished high school.
Yeah, they haven't. A couple times. Carter is a fifth year high school senior, but by God, he just keeps getting distracted.
By what? I don't know. Maybe all the video games.
Did you notice his fingernails?
Oh my God. I made a comment and I was like, okay, I take back every nice thing I said about them, because disgusting. His fingernails were disgusting.
Yeah.
And long, like really long and gross. And no, I can forgive a lot.
It's like a Coke nail, but on every nail.
Yes. So bad.
It's so bad.
Do you think that was an editorial choice to leave that in? Like, hey guys, you need to see
probably
this.
They're like, we're going to leave this in for the detail people. And then we're all like, hoo-ah.
Thanks, right. And ew. All at the same time.
But Brandon's in the same boat, because he's also way delayed, like 4 years. And I'm like, God damn, that is something.
I just think, why don't they just go take their GED? Why continue to take these classes? I'm assuming at night or something. I don't think they're still going to the same high school with all these kids, right? And they have night school or whatever, but I just go get your GED and be done with it.
I think it's really funny, because if you can stand there in a field full of people and yell out, I call upon chaos to cause critical wounds, I'm pretty sure you can memorize a little bit to get through fucking high school. Okay?
Yeah, I think it's... There was a cat in Fast and Furious, and I remember, like, Paul Walker asked this character, like, you're a genius. Why aren't you going to, like, MIT or something? He's like, oh, I have ADD. I can't remember shit. I don't want to. You know what I mean? It's like, that's not important to me. Therefore, I can't do it. I can't remember it. And I'm like, okay, I get that. But still, just go take your goddamn GED, man.
There's, like, a real failure to launch feel going on here for me.
Yeah. The other proper failure to launch, I would say, is Fern.
All right. Go ahead with your description.
Fern has, he's ginger with the frizziest hair ever. And I'm like, just some conditioner. Really, that'll help a lot. First and foremost. It's funny because he is a monster by choice, because as a main character, you don't get to change a lot. You're mm-hmm. the same thing, and you don't die as often as he would like to die, apparently. Mm-hmm. So he likes the change. He likes the constant change. I think he thinks he's a lot cooler than I think he is. That's absolutely spot on. He makes a comment about a stereotype of 30-year-old white men living in their mom's basements. And then he is a 30-something-year-old man living at his mom's house. And I'm like, so you are living that stereotype.
They do talk to his mom, however. And mm-hmm. she's very open about what her deal is. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, maybe we don't perpetuate some stereotypes and stuff in this house. She talks about being gay, poly, and kinky. And I'm like, okay. So you kind of understand a little bit more about why Fern might be more open or whatever. Cause I mean, I guess I don't have a problem with this guy being like, look, I didn't find it as challenging to be a character. So I wanted to go back and be a monster. Mm-hmm. I think he likes being king of the monsters a little bit. This dude is highly obnoxious. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just the most epic of mansplainers.
Yes.
He brings a girl with him, and it is very unclear to me, probably also to her, what their status is. But Fern makes it clear to the camera that he's got interests in some dancer in Seattle. And then he makes like these weird, like growling sounds, like, you know, it's very strange. So he was like, we're not a thing. My heart belongs to this long-legged dancer in Seattle. And then he makes the weird sound, and he's trying to make you think that he has throngs of girls. And I'm like, I don't mm-hmm. believe that for a goddamn minute. So.
No, but I believe that the dancer is doing her job well to make him believe that she likes him. Just like she does with every other fucking man, because it's a goddamn job. And that's how you get the money.
Also, he's singing opera at one point.
Ugh, not well, and I'm like, but yes.
Please, mm-hmm. please stop it. Anyway, I hope he sees himself on camera and is like, oh, maybe I should tone it down all the way.
I'm sure that's absolutely
I have hope.
The other players, it's so funny because they're like, oh, you know, Fern brought Brittany, and we're having a hard time keeping her distinct from the other girls he brings, because he brings a new girl every single time. And, you know, you could tell he wants... In this environment, he is the one mm-hmm. in power, right? So you bring this girl in. She has to learn from you. She has to depend on you. She's one of the monsters. You're teaching her. So that power mm-hmm. dynamic exists
sure.
in his favor. Whereas in the real world, mm-hmm. that's probably not the case. And so this is where he shines
right.
in his right. mind.
Brittany's interesting, though, because it doesn't seem like there's a lot of girl monsters. She does seem to pick up things pretty quickly, and she's pretty mm-hmm. nimble. She's running all over the place and doing stuff. She also mentions that she's mm-hmm. an army brat, and they move for her dad's work every few years. So I'm like, oh, so you guys just happened to bump into each other before you knew anybody else, and that's how she's ended up here?
Yeah, well, they met in college, they say, and I think it might be Marines, because they talked about Lejeune. So not that anyone else cares, but I know if you tell a Marine that they're an Army brat or vice versa, they take it very personally for some reason. I don't know why the military branches hate one another, but they do. But yes, they met in college. They never talk about if either one finished college, what their degrees were in. Maybe it was that one class a semester.
Who knows?
I have no idea. I would like to
know. I'm sure he'd be more than happy to tell you. I'd also like, I think they do a cute thing here. This is again at the winter event where they interview a couple passersby.
This might be my favorite part of the whole fucking documentary.
So it's Kristen and Andrew, passersby. Mm-hmm. And I think they're just out for a walk. And then some LARPers walk past them. And I think it catches them off guard because I too would be like, so what is that? What are that? What are they doing? I'll let you talk a little bit about this if you have a certain strong feelings.
It was so funny because Andrew was like, look at that. And Kristen was like, what? It's just grass. He's like, no, the weird people over there. What are the weird people? Right. Like, she didn't even notice. She's like me. I'm just completely oblivious to this shit. But he, I don't know if you know, Aaron, but he's in sales. And so he sees different people all the time at banks. And I'm like, really? Do you?
He's selling investment strategies. It's very important that we know that. Very important.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Kristen is a social worker. And she's asking some questions. To me, the questions are directed at the documentarians. And Andrew's just answering them without any kind of background.
Just like, prompt, yes.
Girl, run. So,
yeah.
Yeah, a lot of postulation from the Andrew. Mm-hmm.
She was funny, though. She's like, I don't quite understand what the point. And he equated it to Red Rover. And I'm not sure how Red Rover and LARPing really intersect, other than they're both games.
Well, she was just funny because she was like, I just don't know why we have to glorify this violence. Can't they play another game? And he's like Red Rover? Because then you're just trying to break the line. And I'm like, it's okay. No one's challenging your masculinity today.
Oh my God. Yeah, they show us more about this, the winter game. They kind of, it kind of goes on forever. You never see them eating or drinking or sleeping or anything or showering. Some of them have full makeup on, and I'm talking like their full faces, like black or blue or something, and fake hair and weird things like the sea witch or elf or whatever. Yeah. And I'm like, did you have that on for days? Because your skin, oh, it's not going to be happy at all.
She's like a blue Jack Sparrow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, for a time, and then you find out that somebody did a big thing and they made all the sea elves extinct. And then she goes on a bit of a tirade about, you don't know what this is going to do to business and world economy. Like
commerce.
Yeah. <I know. laughs> They're a big deal. The sea elves.
I'm just like, ma'am, this isn't real. I know you're upset, but this is not real.
I liked the part that the big thing that they did was around a tiny campfire. And it just like looked like not a big thing. But yeah, you can get major punishments for big things is what I also understand. But I'm like, it doesn't really look like that big a thing. So the out of context for me. Yeah.
Well, and that's also where I was like, okay, they're doing this big spell. And Shane was the one doing the big spell. And I'm like, and they're like, it worked. I'm like, of course it fucking worked. They wrote it in that it would work. Why do you even have to go through all this? You know it's going to work. You should just yell, big spell, and everyone's extinct and be done with it.
It's very weird.
I do not get it.
Let's get into the tea, shall we? There are relationships at Nero. Some work for a time. Some don't anymore. And it causes bad blood between people. So we talked to, again, Sir Gregor, who is JP, the longest running West Coast LARPer ever. and he's in a relationship with Holly, and she plays Slice in The World. And yeah, so I think they met doing this, right? They met here at Nero, and they talk about sometimes there's a little jealousy because I think Sir Gregor is a bit of a flirt. And obviously the fact that you got a lady now doesn't mean that you can't still flirt with them bitches.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the character. Integrity. It's the character.
Okay. Thanks.
That's what we call method acting. Her character also has a partner in the game, so he can get a little jealous. He, being Sir Gregor, can get a little jealous of this other partner. It makes sense to me that you would have relationships in a game like this. This is such a unique thing to do that if you find a woman who does it, because it's probably rare that there are women. There seem to be more men than women. So if you find a woman who is also into the same weird thing that you do, you would glom onto that. So it makes sense that relationships happen here, but they don't always work out. Like you said,
they don't. I think Becca is a good example of that. I don't know what her dude's name was, but they had a bit of a falling out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love the fact that she was like, she was engaged to someone with Nero for a while but not anymore. And it was hard at first, but now it's fine. Okay. And then they talk to him, who's still playing the game as well. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, they dated for like 2.5 years. And someone's like, weren't you engaged for a minute? He's like, no. So he seems like a gem. Also, she has a bit more power in this relationship, as it were, because she's one of the plot people. So she can write shitty plots for him and give him very little power. And he's like, well, I want this for my story. And she's like, no.
Sorry, that doesn't fit. I love that. Sorry, we can't make that work. You can't travel all that way. It's fucking dumb. It's the greatest.
Yes, Becca. Yes. That'll teach him to fuck with you, girl.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Also, we meet Eric Merriweather, who says that he's a male escort in the game. Who wrote that in? Is it someone who wanted to be escorted by him, per se?
I mean, I guess. This was one of my favorite parts. I was like, oh, tell us more,
Merriweather. Look, I'm joining that game now.
Yeah. Look, guys, there's no sex, okay? It's just a sensual massage.
That's what I wrote down, too.
And he gets paid in coin. But
fake money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, it's worth it, ladies or dudes. Because he was a massage therapist in the outside world. So he's bringing them skills and he's expensive. Mm-hmm. And he makes sure he tells you that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's worth every pittance, farthing, whatever.
Doubloon, whatever. Yeah.
Someone else made a comment that the characters can pretend to mate. Is that like
dry humping
one's leg? What the fuck? We are the worst.
So some of these characters, Slice's partner has like a weird rat nose situation. So if they were going to mate, does that have to like move to the back of your head? Like,
and there are many layers of clothing involved. How long would that take to disrobe?
Just like all the eyelets.
And then put it back
on. You gotta
weave
that shit back together. It's all disheveled.
Yeah. That armor. It's not coming off easy.
There's porn of this, right?
Oh, I hope so. I'm going to find it now.
I was going to say, note to
self. You know, I know there is one with Jenna Jameson where they did a play on like the labyrinth.
Really?
It's brilliant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Do you think you have to cast a spell on that too? I call your pants to the earth. Oh, God. All right.
This bone will be hard forevermore. Oh, we're the worst.
Then now we're not going to get invited. So damn it.
No.
Okay.
We could be bards, I think. Yeah. Maybe good as bards. Can we talk about the fact that at the end of this winter raid, mm-hmm. or whatever they call it, gathering, if you will, there's a secret that Shane's been keeping, Aaron. What does he want to tell everyone now that this raid is over, all the games have been played, all the people mm-hmm. killed?
Look, everyone, after the April event, Nero Seattle will be on hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
So
he just can't do it all himself anymore. It's just too much work. And he refuses to do a game that's subpar, Aaron. He has standards.
Seems like he has been doing games that are subpar, but good for trying. There's a little drama that's going on right now. Would you care to elaborate?
So Dave, as we mentioned before, is one of the plot people, right? So he does the Mothman thing well. But he's also a plot person. So he's kind of a big part of the game. And there, you know, he's helped run the game and build the game. And so there was some talk about him buying the game. He would have to buy the chapter. They never talk about how much. But then the spring event, he's a no-show. He doesn't even show up. Doesn't tell anyone. They try to get a hold of him. Like
wellness check?
Check or something. Yeah, mm-hmm. just to make sure they're alive. So they finally get him to answer the phone, and he was just on his computer playing World of Warcraft. Whatever.
And I'm like, what a fucking move. Because I don't believe for one instant that he just forgot. I mean, he was that involved, right? Mm-hmm. He was one of the cornerstones of this whole thing. And I think it's just a flex mm-hmm. to be like, I could take it or leave it. So
yeah,
I recommend that he take it. Because I don't feel like he's got a lot going on outside of that.
Well, they do talk about he's a single dad raising an 8-year-old daughter. And there was a point where she came up to him and was like, yo, you're playing this game way too much. And I still exist over here. And you seem to have forgotten that, right? His solution was to get her a computer so she could play as well. And I'm like, I don't think that's necessarily the solution to the problem. But then with as much as Shane talked about how much work this is, I'm like, so now you're just adding something else to this that you are going to take that time away from your daughter? So.
Well, I mean, he can't take on pulling a shirt down over his belly, so it's tough.
It's them bitch tits. They keep pulling it up.
Maybe so.
Maybe he needs a bra.
Anyway, he just does not come off well. I mean, like, I wish I had more sympathy for a single dad. But I don't. He just comes off like a weasel in this, and I did not like.
Yeah. Agreed. Some of the outcomes of the last game, JP, our Sir Gregor, has decided to quit LARPing for a while because mm-hmm. they don't know what's going to happen with this chapter, right? And him and his girl, they've seen too many relationships end up breaking up, and he's like, I just need to step away so I can maintain this relationship. And I thought that's a really positive thing to say, mm-hmm. like, I'll give this thing up that I've been doing for a long time for this relationship. Brittany, the military kid, they have to move to Lejeune. She was going to look into the East Coast chapter, and one of her brothers, she has like six siblings, which seems like a lot of fucking kids, was going to go join with her because he was interested in doing it. And I thought, well, that's pretty cool. She's got a new hobby out of it.
And she mentions that her folks are somewhat supportive. I think they didn't love the witchcraft aspect of this.
Right.
But they're not standing in her way. And I'm like, well, that's good because I think she's an adult, but whatevs. So, yeah.
And Dave does end up buying the chapter for an undisclosed amount.
Well, if you have to ask how much it is, then you can't right. afford it.
I'm guessing there were some mm-hmm. gold coins exchanged and it was dumped, right?
What if it was just in gold coins? Yes. Okay. That made me very happy.
And he has continued. I think it's funny because he's makes a comment that, you know, things will be run differently and they'll be run more smoothly. And it was an arrogant thing to say, but it seems like things mm-hmm. are running a little bit better. Like has a little more control over the game. He says the monsters no longer stay up all night. He puts them to bed by 2 a.m. I thought that's fucking all night mm-hmm. in my book.
Right.
At least some sleep.
Yeah. There's a real, I'm the new sheriff in town vibe,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, if it makes everything better, then okay. But it's just smarmy and dick-like and...
It is. And in my opinion, it's just... How much could you have helped alleviate some of the stress to begin with so we wouldn't have ended up in this situation? You could have done some of these things and implemented them earlier on, and so things were running smoothly and Shane didn't go crazy. How much was Shane not giving up any responsibility, and so he was making himself crazy and causing the situation? I don't know. And sometimes people who really want to do well aren't necessarily, if you're not organized, if you don't have that kind of mindset, it is very difficult. So maybe Dave has that and he brings that to the table and he could just make it a little easier to run.
Sure. Well, Shane does say he was surprised by the amount of reality that it took to run fantasy for other people. And I was like, that's, I get it. You know, he got into this probably thinking it was going to be a lot more fun than it was. Because anybody that's playing any kind of party knows you cannot fucking wait till it's over.
Like, it's, yeah.
Yeah. So I said that he's been doing this every month for 8 years until the end when it's not every month, but still.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as it grows, right? If it was just a couple people at first doing their thing, like 10 people, it would have been a lot easier. And as it grows into more and more people, it's just a lot of work. And what do they say? Don't make your hobby your job, because then you'll hate it. That's right. Wilson agrees.
Except for us. And I'm dying to make this my job. So sounds great.
Right. Okay. So that's kind of the end. This is a very fun documentary, but I had so many questions. And if the director hears this, please hit us up with an email, because I have so many questions that you or someone has got to answer. Someone has got to be held accountable for this.
For putting this in my mind, just sort of, though, not a whole.
Yeah.
It's a great question to say, where are they sleeping? Are they taking a shower? Like, yeah. Where are the bathrooms? Anyway.
Yes.
This was really cute, and I'm glad we did it when we did, because it was a joy, and it went really fast, I will say that. So, honorary Erin this week?
My honorary Erin is Kristen, the passerby, because she was like, what? Mm-hmm. And then she asked questions, and she sounded much like I did through this documentary. What? Yep. And then asking questions. So she's my honorary Erin.
I love that. So I went with Paul's mom. Long-suffering Paul's mom, as she deals with Paul's dad and the hobbies. And she seems...
Yeah,
she seems like she's a saint. So, liked her a lot.
Yeah, I did too. As she was sitting there in all that clutter, and she was like, well, this is where I live.
Right, right.
That's where we are now. Oh, goodness. All right. That was a good one. You guys, you should go check it out. It was so funny.
It was good.
What are we going to do? Well, first of all, I will talk about, it's not going to be next week. I have to travel for work. So we're going to take 1 week off, and then we'll come back the following week with what documentary?
We're going to do Mixtape Trilogy, The Stories of the Power of Music. Do be careful, because we found that there's more than one documentary called Mixtape. So
all look good.
Yeah.
But
so this is a 2022 release, 1 hour and 26 minutes. Looks like you can find it on Tubi or Prime if you don't want to do Tubi. So yeah, I'm excited. I like Muzak.
Me too. And this one just seems to be a documentary about the relationships between the artists and their fans. So kind of how that works. So we'll see. I haven't seen it yet. Looks interesting. I have a lot of mixtapes and mix CDs that I just found that I'm re-listening to. So I'm here for it.
Did you find the one that you were looking for?
No, there's still at least two, if not three, that I can't find, but I haven't really looked for them again.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks for coming along for this ride. I hope you enjoyed it. And we will talk to you in 2 weeks.
Sounds good. Laters.
Bye.